Being a mom is challenging and beautiful, most of the time in the same day. This beautiful guest is a mummy of a 16-month-old, and she juggles being a mother and a performer and includes her daughter in the industry as much as possible. Introducing skin performer of the stage and screen and the lead in many pantos and tribute acts, Vicky Stokely. In this Mother's Day special, we talk about the mom guilt, the working unsocial hours, and how to make the career work with a baby. Plus, chatting about her amazing career in the costume world, which is definitely educational. We also talk about her experience in the musical theater schools and how it felt to be in prestigious TV productions such as The Teletubbies and In the Night Garden. A wonderful and heartfelt chat. Let's go. So Vicky, what is it like having a young child when working in the performing arts?
I think the biggest shock for me, just becoming a mum, which I think now I have a lot of friends who are mothers. It's just the mum guilt for everything. Just day-to-day life, take performing out of it. Having a little child just changes everything. So I think it's been amazing to sort of share. I've been very, very lucky to share what I do with my daughter, who is now 16 months old, which is crazy. I'm already thinking about the future with her. I can't wait to sort of be able to go to the theatre with her and share all this stuff with her. But right now it's like mummy needs to do her work and her job. And it's brilliant that I've been able to bring her with me. She's literally there. I mean, that's a good and a bad thing, by the way. A lot of people go back to work and think, okay, I can go and be myself now. I'm mummy at home and I'm me at work. But having Lily there, she's always there. So it's been very, very special to be able to share things with her. So I can talk about this already, but I've just finished a pantomime with her, and I've worked with this director for 11 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, 11 years. And he very kindly let her just be as involved as I needed her to be. It was brilliant. But, yeah. Oh my god, I've got some muscles now, because I was literally doing the run of the show with her in my arms at times, and it was full on.
Wow.
But it's fantastic to sort of share my passion with my daughter. Mm. And my husband's in the arts as well, so he was in the panto too. So the whole family were there. It was brilliant.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Because then you can't really have, you know, your other half look after the child if you're both going to be in the same production.
And he does the stage management as well. So he's there sort of making everything happen. He hasn't got time to sort of go and give Lily a nap or, yeah, that was the thing as well. We do, you know, we do a run of the show. Oh, and this was The Wizard of Oz, by the way. So mm-hmm. I was Dorothy. So as everyone knows, Dorothy doesn't really leave the stage.
No.
So it was, we did run act one. Then it was lunch for everyone. Everyone else got to have a nice lunch break. I'm like, right, Lily, please go to sleep. Let's have a nap now. It was that kind of pressure.
Wow.
It's a juggling game, I have to say. And I'm sure other mums in the industry know that. And obviously, as soon as you leave your child to someone else, even though she's out of sight, you're still feeling that.
Yep.
Like, is she okay?
Yeah.
All right. And it's amazing. And I've heard you say in your podcast before that you can go on stage and you can just become this character and sort of forget about everything else that's going on. It was wonderful to do that, but there's still that little niggle when you're a mum, just like, are they okay? Are they all right? Are they okay? But yeah, she absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
I think Lily probably broke the record for how many times you can watch the same production without being in the production or like running the lights or something where you have to watch it. Yeah, she was there every day. Not
Gosh.
Every show, but every day. She knows the choreography now. It was very sweet. Someone bought her a little puppet set of all the Wizard of Oz characters.
Aww.
And she gets the Wicked Witch and she's like, boo. And she knows it inside out. And she still wakes up in the middle of the night and says, Toto, Toto. So it's had a lasting impact on her anyway.
Yeah. Sounds like she will be a performer. I think when you're in that industry from such a young age, it does have an impact.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, I started dancing when I was three, but I was exposed to musical theater and musicals from a very, very young age. Yeah. My mum used to put on The King and I and Singing in the Rain and all of those. Yes, love them so much. And I would just know them.
Yeah.
I would just know them. And, you know, I would probably have been like 18 months, 2 years old. And then I started to develop the script and all of that, you know.
Putting shows on in your sitting room.
Yes. Yeah. So that's probably what will happen is you're developing their creative skills from the very, very beginning.
Yeah. And actually, I think it's been amazing to see her develop over, you know, it's quite a short run, the pantomime I do. We're sort of there for 6 weeks in total, including the rehearsals. But being exposed to so many other adults, just watching her walking, like she was suddenly, you know, quite wobbly to start with, and suddenly she had this rehearsal space, this big open space to walk around in, and she was, yeah, suddenly really confident. Just, yeah, being exposed to adults, I think, has been a really lovely thing for her.
Mm.
And, they loved having her there. They say they loved having her there. I think they did. But it was just, it brought a nice energy to the rehearsal room. Everyone was, maybe they are just very happy people anyway, but there was that kind of support for me, support for her. And she was just in probably the most friendly environment she could ever wish for.
It was so lovely.
It was really, yeah, it was very special. It was very hard because it was relentless, but it was a very, very special thing, something that I'll remember forever. And I hope, I mean, she's very little. She probably won't remember it, but that's the magic of a phone. She has it all photographed and videoed. And there was a very special moment for me in the final show. I was allowed to bring her on for the walk down, and the director bought her a little Dorothy dress to wear. So we got to take our bow together, and that's something she's very good at, taking a bow all the time. So yeah, I think she's definitely got theatrical nature about
herself. She sounds lovely. I mean, my kids have had their moments where they've been easy, and sometimes you just know, I don't know if I could have put them in that setting at some points. But then if they're always surrounded by that, that you adapt, don't you, as a child, especially that first 18 months is actually the prime time for setting the stone for how they actually are throughout the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
It's incredible. So the fact that she can socialize and also keep herself busy and do all those things while mummy is on stage, I think that's amazing. But what you said about, you know, you're on stage, but you've got that niggle. I totally get it. I'm sure a lot of mummies out there will be thinking that, like, you go to work, even if they're going like an hour away from the child to work, there's this, is the baby okay?
Yeah.
You know, and that need, because you are as attached to that child as they are to you.
And I think as well, what makes it really difficult, I think, for a lot of mums is that, you know, lots of mums go back to work, sometimes earlier than I did. I mean, I did go back when she was about 4 months old. I'll touch on that later. But she, sorry, I totally lost my train of thought. That's mum brain for you. That is definitely a thing.
It is a thing.
Working with antisocial hours. And I think that makes you feel even worse because you miss bedtime. You know, that's the time when you really want to be there.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, some people go back to work after, you know, 3 months, and but they're doing their 9 to 5, they're down the road and they've dropped them off at nursery, and that's kind of their structure. With what we do, it's different every week.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you will leave them when they're wanting their milk. I mean, I breastfeed still. So she's 15 months, I'm still breastfeeding. So there's always that little tie as well.
Mm.
You know, you want to be the one to put her to bed. And I think that just is another level of guilt, just because it feels that much harder, that much worse, because of those really special moments that you really want to treasure, like bedtime and bath time. You're not there for that. So I think it's being able to sort of tell yourself, you're not actually working any more hours than other mums doing a 9 to 5. Most of the time you're working less, but because they don't see you until the morning, it feels like you've been away for ages. So that's something I've really had to take a step back and go like, no, don't beat yourself up about this. Yes, you're missing bedtime, but it's not the be all and end all. I've had to really shift my mentality about that. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's a shame, but it's okay.
I think, it's so normal to do that as a mother, you know, and you want to be there for those times. But I think as long as the child feels Like you are, when you're there, you are fully present. You're with them, the bonding, the playtime, the care, the love. As long as that is all there when you are there, that is all that matters.
And how lucky am I that I get that full day with her? You know, that's a plus of what we do sometimes. I mean, not in rehearsals, but when you're in sort of in a show in the evening, that's a lovely plus to have.
Yes.
You spend more time than some other people get.
So yeah, lucky. Definitely, definitely. I mean, you have done a lot of roles. Over
a lot of
the
random
years.
Stuff too.
So you've got Spice Girls tribute, you've done ABBA, Steps, which left me with so many songs stuck in my head for days, by the way. I was like, I am not going to sing that.
Have you seen that Steps are releasing, they're having a musical made about them, about their songs?
I have not.
It's literally just come out. I've just seen it on the old Facebook.
This is very exciting. Mom, we're going.
It looks so good. I mean, is it going to work like ABBA has? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. We'll have to see. Yeah, I'm sure it would work. Yes.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. But it must be amazing to do those tributes and be in those characters and stuff. But not just that, you were a part of the Teletubbies as well. And you've played the lead in many pantos.
Yeah.
You've spent an incredible career. How did you get into character performing?
I feel like I pride myself on working, never looking like myself. It's like, should I take that to heart that no one ever wants to see me as me? No, it's fine. But with the sort of costume work, I fell into that kind of by mistake, really. So I trained in musical theatre. That was what I wanted to do. And I saw an audition for Thomas the Tank Engine and I was like, oh my God, I need to be in this show, because when I was a kid, I had metal trains that I carried in my rucksack around on my back, because, you know, plastic wasn't as big a thing then. They were proper metal trains. Uh-huh. And I think that's why my posture is so terrible, because at a young age, I wanted to carry these trains everywhere. And I remember applying for the audition, and I'm sure the only reason I was seen is because, you know, I was very professional, wrote this proper email, and then at the end I was like, and I'm the biggest Thomas the Tank Engine fan ever. I was like, right, I'm just gonna send it. And they saw me, and I didn't actually get the job. I was so nervous. Aww. I mean, this was fresh out of drama, yes. So it was my first audition, and I was so nervous. But I met the company. That was the important thing. Sadly, the company doesn't exist anymore. They were Premier Stage Productions. They were a really big children's theatre company a few years ago. And I met them and they were very kind. They were like, maybe come back when you've had a bit more experience. We really like you, but come back for future auditions. I was like, okay, fine. And I actually bumped into one of the directors at another show I was doing. I was doing this, it's not on my, it must be on my CV somewhere. I was in a kick line, in a precision dance troupe. It was a bit like the Tiller Girls and the Rockettes, you know, when you're in that line and everyone's doing exactly the same thing. We were opening Paul Zerdan's tour. Like, he's the famous ventriloquist puppeteer guy.
Oh, okay.
He always does the panto at the Palladium.
Right.
I think he won America's Got Talent, even though he's British.
Oh, gosh.
He's fantastic. Hmm. But we randomly opened his tour with this kick line. And there was a guy in the wings. And I was like, I really recognize him. Who is that? And it was one of the directors from this show. And he remembered me. And he was like, oh, Vicky, like, how are you? Actually, we've got some auditions coming up. Why don't you apply again? And it just put them back on my radar. And I did. I applied. And again, I got down to like the final two for this one. It was for Rory the Racing Car. Like, you know, it's all these literally list off anything on Milkshake, anything on Channel 5 and CBeebies. I've probably got some sort of connection to them somehow. And I got down to the final two. And it was about how you looked at the end of the day. You had to look like the character on the television show. And apparently the other girl looked a little bit more like this character. Mm-hmm. And they offered me, they're like, again, we like you. Didn't quite get there, but we're going to Nigeria in a few months. Would you like to come as an ASM just so we get to work with you and we can see where it goes? And I was like, oh my God, yes, 100%.
Yeah.
My parents, they were so, so supportive. But obviously, like, Nigeria, what?
Why are you going there? Very, very
company,
far.
Why are they sending you there? What's going on?
Yeah.
And actually, my boyfriend at the time, his dad was, he said to me that if you were my daughter, I would burn your passport. I would not let you go. It was, it was quite intense at the time with my partner then. But thank goodness I ignored them.
Yes.
And went anyway, because that's where I met my now husband. He was Barney the dinosaur.
Oh, I love it.
He was Barney the dinosaur. And I was there as his ASM to start with. And he was also sort of stage managing it and company managing it a little bit. But this is such a long-winded story.
No, go for it.
So he was Barney the dinosaur. And actually, I think one of the first things he said to me was, "I'm really sorry, but do you mind doing up my groin?" Because the costume goes like there's a zip from one ankle to the other ankle. So I had to lie between his legs and zip him up. Like was one
what
of
a
first,
chat up line.
Isn't it?
Oh my God.
Yeah, romance is not dead here. Like, it's just hilarious. I love Blossom to a Man. Not exactly. But we went on this contract to Nigeria and basically we had a bit of a conflict of sponsors. We were sponsored by some sort of chocolate milk company out right. there, but there's also a Barney milk drink in Nigeria and we have Barney in the show and we were sponsored by this other milk company and there was this whole drama about we can't have Barney in the show if we're sponsored by someone else, so we had to sort of rejig the whole show. But then it meant my moment to shine, because it meant one of the characters couldn't get changed in time for the finale and I got to wear one of the costumes and I got to be Angelina Ballerina.
Amazing.
The little mouse. And I remember watching them rehearse. I was in this room full of, like, there was Pingu, Bob the Builder, Fireman Sam, this like bizarre sort of mashup of characters in this show. And I was like, this looks so fun. What is this costume world? I want to get into this. And then when I got the opportunity to play Angelina, I was like, I put the costume on and all you can see, like, because you've got this kind of triangle head and you see out of the nose and it's there. So you've got this real sort of pinpoint vision.
Oh gosh, no peripherals whatsoever.
No, and like, I mean, she had a mouth down here, but you really couldn't see much from that. But it kind of gave you a reassurance that the floor was there because you couldn't see the floor unless you physically looked at it. And I remember going out, because I hadn't been able to put the costume on until we were out in Nigeria, because they'd been sent out like months in advance.
Okay.
And obviously with the stage lights as well, I was like, right, don't fall off the stage. This is your moment. Like, I put that costume on. And the adrenaline of being completely covered, being completely Angelina, was so thrilling to me. I loved that. I mean, it was, you sort of thought like, oh, what can I get away with? Like, you kind of, there's this like cheeky element to it. But that's kind of where it all started. Just this little, just, I was only in the finale as this character, but I was like, oh, I love this. And luckily, actually, this company then gave me other opportunities and I started playing all these other characters. I did Mr. Bump. I did Fireman Sam. It was just, it was so much fun. And I think that costume world is a little niche in the performing arts world that people don't think about. It's a real skill. It's very hot. Obviously, you're sort of stuck within your own body heat. It's not pleasant, but I don't mind it, but it's very claustrophobic. It's not for everyone, but it's also very heavy. You've got to be quite strong. I mean, if you need anyone to carry anything on their head, I'm your gal. I've got ridiculous neck muscles because some of the costumes I've worn, like I then went on to do things like in the Night Garden, Teletubbies.
Oh, yeah.
But in the Night Garden, I was Macapaca. I mean, anyone with kids will be like, yes. We know who that is. Macapaca is the like stone cleaning little dude from the Night Garden. He's brilliant.
Yes.
But his head was, it had like animatronics within it. So like the mouths move and the eyes
move.
Oh
gosh, yeah.
And it weighed about 3 stone apparently. I mean, I never weighed it myself, but apparently
that's
that on its own was, yeah, 3 stone just on like sort of just balanced on the top of your head.
Yeah.
I mean, you're quite well supported. You've got sort of things around your head and your chin. But it's a lot. And he's very wide. He's a bit like, hey, Arnold, hey, football head. Like, I love hey, Arnold.
Yes.
It was just this field of work was just opened up to me. And I was like, this is fun. I want to do this.
No, but it's incredible. And I didn't actually know much about it. It wasn't until a friend of mine was like, oh, you need to speak to Vicky. And I was like, I don't know much about the character world, but it does sound really, really amazing. And you're right, it is niche.
Yeah.
Because I've not heard about it, but it does sound so much fun.
Yeah.
And you could be completely crazy with those characters. And I kind of like the cheeky, what could you get away with bit.
Oh, absolutely. I worked at Chessington World of Adventures once, and they had a lovely Madagascar show, you know, with like Alex the Lion, King Julian. But I got to be King Julian.
Oh, the best one.
I think that was my cheekiest. We used to try and run away and try and get on rides in the costumes. I didn't ever really. I got on one, but it was a children's ride and they didn't start it because basically I couldn't get the bar over my head because they're so massive. They're like, we're not starting the ride, King Julian, you need to get off. But I tried. I ran off and did things. And you go into the shops and be like, can we get anything? You couldn't speak, obviously. Mm-hmm. That's the thing as well. I mean, it's very rare that you get characters that actually speak from inside, especially in a live show, because it just sounds awful. But what you can get away with body language and like people know what you're talking about. I have to say, but actually when I trained, I used to love mask work. And I was like, actually, that's probably where it all stems from. I loved that sort of covering my face and having to use my body to do the talking. And I feel like I can't even sit still now. I'm moving so much.
But body language is universal, isn't it?
That's it. Exactly. So King Julian was really fun. He was one of my favorites to do.
I can imagine. Well, I didn't even think of that. Like, it wouldn't just be on stage, but you'd be in character, like amusement parks, and you'd have to stay in those roles for probably quite a long time.
Yeah. I mean, here's a story for you. So in this Madagascar show, it was a long old contract. I think I did from when the park opened, which was like March, until October, I think.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, you were doing sort of, on the peak days, you were doing sort of 5 shows a day. Which is, you know, it was physically very demanding. And we were just on a concrete stage as well. Like the injuries we got were not good.
No.
But it was a brilliant contract. And I have friends for life from that show. They were some wonderful, wonderful people there. But what was I saying? What, like, my brain is such.
It's the Mother's Day special. It's allowed.
You all understand.
It's allowed.
Oh, my God. It happens all the time. Just mid-conversation. I'm like, what was I even talking about? Right. So. A lot of injuries, a lot of illness at times, like you get sort of sickness bugs that just wiped everyone out. So we sort of have to jump into different roles. And I was a bit too tall to be one of the penguins, but, you know, at a push, I'd be one of the Madagascar penguins. And I could only be one of them. He was very tall and skinny, Kowalski. And these costumes were kind of solid shells. And then you just had your little flipper arms. And then your legs out were kind of tights and then big, big flippers. And we used to have to do meet and greets where, you know, kids would come up to meet their favourite characters or whatever. But you came out for a certain amount, like for a half an hour at a time. And on the quiet days, like, you were just desperate for someone to come and say hi. Like, you'd be running around like, please come and see us. And this little girl came up and she was probably 2, maybe 3 years old. And we were like, right, she's going to have the best meet and greet ever. We can't wait to entertain this child. And she walked up to us and she wanted to kiss us all on the beaks.
Aww.
And if I'd been a parent of this little child, I would have picked the child up to our height. But instead, they watched us desperately trying to pivot forward to reach this child because you can't bend. There's no movement.
Oh, no.
So the first 2 penguins managed it, but they... I mean, some of the guys in the costume were sort of 5 foot. They're quite, quite little. And I'm 5'5", which is definitely pushing it for that costume. And the girl got to me and I was definitely like leaning forward, like, come on. I was on my tiptoes, like, come on. I was so close. And then she just got hold of my beak and she pulled. And I just went on top of her. Oh, my God. It's the worst. And because you're in the costume, I had nothing to push on. I couldn't push myself up because I was just pushing myself in the costume. Would that make sense?
Did you just roll away?
Well, the presenters eventually came and got me, but they were laughing so hard. You know when, like, you haven't got any strength because you're laughing so much. I was like, I'm a full woman on this child.
Yeah.
Is she even alive? Oh. Have I squashed her? Is she okay? And it felt like it was forever, but it was probably only a few seconds. She eventually went, the penguin's cuddling me. I was like, oh, she's alive. She's alive.
And she thinks it's a cuddle. She's not damaged.
I mean, they did lift me up eventually and the penguin's beak was just like concertinaed in. I was like, yeah, I think we need to take me away. And these costumes are expensive. So yeah, I was in a bit of trouble for that. But it wasn't my fault.
No. So pick up the children to eye level.
Yeah. If you can see that you've got people trying to desperately bend when they can't bend. Yeah. Help them out.
Yes. Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah. I love stories of people falling over in costume. I get sent it a lot, like things on YouTube. People are like, ah, is this you?
Nope. Oh, not today.
Not today. I'm waiting for it to happen, though. It will happen one day, I'm sure.
What's been your biggest, like, epic fail? Was that it?
That was pretty good. In a costume, I'm tempting fate now, touch wood. I haven't fallen over on stage in a costume.
Both touching.
But I did go through a phase when I was actually being just a normal actress with my face on show that every last performance I would do something like fall over or something would go wrong. It was like, again, when I did The Wizard of Oz like 10 years ago, there was like a bubble machine for when Glinda entered and we did a free show day. And at the end of the day, there was sort of just a bit of my husband who was in charge of cleaning it up, but he did clean it up, but it kind of left a sort of sticky, shiny film on the floor. And I was running away from the twister or trying to get home before the twister came. And I was holding a real dog and had to run through the audience past this puddle. And I just was on the floor, on my back, with this dog in my arms, like full on arse over tit, as you were. And I was just like, don't drop the dog. But oh my goodness, I'd smashed my mic pack into my back. I'm so bruised. It really, really hurt. But again, you just didn't have any time to stop. It was just like, it got to the interval when I went, ow, that really hurt. But yeah, that was pretty embarrassing. And I was going through a phase of like every last performance, something just little, but like little mishaps happening. And maybe it was because the adrenaline of the last one, not focused enough.
But you sort of relax when you think it's the last show. I remember doing that in ballet performances. It would be like near the last show and I'd sort of relax. And then steps that I would do perfectly fine, easy steps, I sort of fumble and I'm like, oh, Candy, what are you doing? Because you just relax your mind. It's not the body, it's the mind. It's just something gives. And then you're off.
That's it. You've fallen over. So that's, at the moment, in a
catch word.
Nothing yet.
What would you say is your favourite role that you've ever done, either in character or in panto? Or
it's got to be when I was Nunu in the Teletubbies. That was such a special experience. Again, like, I feel like most of my career is being a bit like, I'm just so happy to be here, like taking it all in my stride, like a bit of imposter syndrome, that sort of thing. Like, why am I doing this job? Like, what have I done to deserve this when someone else hasn't? Or, I mean, that sounds like a horrible way to say it, but you know what I mean? Why am I here? But with the Teletubbies, I had a skin agent at this point. So someone who represents people who do a lot of puppetry, but mainly that kind of costume work. So films for like, you know, Star Wars, most of the people in that are in skin and that sort of costume work. So they tried to get me in for the Teletubby audition. And they didn't want to see me because I'd only had stage experience. They're like, we want people who've done TV and film. So I was like, that's a shame. Never mind. But then she was like, I'm going to get you to meet them anyway. Maybe you can help them with the auditions. So I went in to help get people into the costumes, which were the original Teletubby costumes. I was absolutely geeking out from like 20 years ago. I mean,
I think I would have been the same.
they're a bit gross.
I know.
20 years worth of sweat, but being in there for 20 years.
Yeah.
Because this remake was for the 20th anniversary, which is now nearly 30 years ago, which is
The
30th anniversary is coming up, which is just makes me feel old. Makes me feel really old. Because I definitely used to watch it. I was too old for it when it came out, but I watched it.
So was
it,
I.
For sure.
Yes.
But I was there sort of helping get people into costume and they were doing their auditions. And it was actually really fascinating to watch from an audition side, like be on the panel. I recommend anyone who can do that, if you're in the industry, if you ever get a chance to be on a panel, you learn so much about how people come across in an audition situation.
Really? Absolutely. That's fascinating.
There's a tip for you, if you can, do it.
Yes.
And I think that gave me a massive advantage because after the second day of auditions, I'd made sort of got a little relationship going with the directors and things by then. And they're like, you're the right height for La La. Do you want to audition tomorrow? And I was like, Yes, I do. Thank you. And I'd seen what they were doing. I went home and I was like, got in the mirror, was working on my movements and the voice, the La La voice as well, that you had to be able to sound like the originals. And I got through the first round. That was brilliant. Then the second round and the final round, to be fair, was they just put a Teletubby mound in the middle of the room you had to put the costume on, and part of it was just to get up to the top of the hill was an achievement. That was a tick. And I'll never forget the wonderful girl who plays Poe. She's a stunt artist, but she's like, I think she's probably about 4'10", but she is just a machine. She's wonderful. So she's a stunt artist, and she walked up the hill and she absolutely face planted.
Oh no.
In the costume, but she just went, oh, and like sort of stood up and like starred it out completely. And I think that's like, she's hired.
Yeah,
she's
yeah.
amazing. But I got down to the final two, which was amazing.
Yes.
But the girl who got it was Upsy Daisy in the night cut and like on the television. So it's like, absolutely, you are
Get it.
A goddess to yeah. me. Like, you're amazing. Yeah. So they then came up to me and they're like, well, we really like you. But they really liked me, and they were like, would you like to be Nunu? And I was just like, I assumed he was some sort of remote control gadget. I didn't really think he was going to be something you could get inside.
See, I didn't know that either.
See, I was inside him, which was so much fun. It was literally like almost a bit like a go-kart. You had a control behind you. So I'm going to do it now. So like, if you had Nunu's face here,
yep.
you could put your arm down his trunk and you could puppeteer his eyes. And then you had the controls kind of behind you. So it's all sort of sideways. You couldn't see out. So you had a little screen in front of you. So when they were filming you, you could see what they could see.
Okay.
So that was another thing that you had to sort of get wow. used to. And you can flip it so you can see. You can either have it so it looks like a mirror. So you're sort of moving the same way as you can see. Or you can mm-hmm. flip it so it's kind of in reverse. It took a long, there's a lot of outtakes of me going like bumping into things, going like, sorry, from inside the costume. Just, it took a while to get used to it. But it was so much fun just being on that set with everyone. And again, I'm actually really pleased I wasn't Lala, because I think I would have just got there and been like, with these amazing, talented cast who've all done this sort of TV stuff before, I would have been out of my depth. I mean, I would have swam with it and gone and done whatever I could. But actually watching from a slightly less pressured position,
mm-hmm.
and it was amazing. Again, just a learning experience to see what they were all doing. Oh, it was wonderful. And just, I had a moment where I was sitting inside the Hoover. Such a stupid sentence. Where I was like, this is my job. I'm a Hoover. And I'm proud.
Oh.
It was brilliant. It was so much fun.
I'm learning so much because I think I was, oh my God, I was probably about 15 still enjoying Teletubbies.
Yeah, I was definitely.
Starting
secondary school, I think.
I don't know why it just got me. It was just this new thing. But you watched it.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything deeper going on. It was funny.
Yeah.
And then that was it. But yeah, you would have to run up in heavy costumes up that hill, survive it,
yeah.
style it out if you fall. Yeah. Got stunt artists going in for these jobs. So that, you know, they're really highly regarded, and
you've got to be physically strong.
Yeah,
for sure. It was,
I don't know why more people aren't doing this. It sounds incredible. And when you say amazing. Like, you know, you're just enjoying being there, I mean, it's such a privilege to be doing that. But I think maybe so many people in the performing arts, maybe at the moment, are just feeling so challenged and so stressed by what they're not doing, or you know, they've got a job but it's not long enough. But maybe if you were to be like, I'm in this right now and I need to be in the moment, enjoying this, enjoy my career, because we don't know how long it's gonna last.
Absolutely. And I have days where I feel like, have I done what I set out to do in my career? I trained in musical theater. I've not ever had a West End audition, which there's always that part of me that's like, oh, I do wish I could have tried. I might have gone in and failed, but then at least I would have known I'd given it a go. I've just never had the right agent for that industry. Mm-hmm. And I feel, you know, I do look at my career and I go, I've not been in the West End. Have I failed? And I know a lot of people look at my career and go, well, it's not musical theatre, is it? But who cares? I've been so lucky that I've been able to, me and my husband own our house. We're in such a wonderful position where we've both earned a living in the arts. And there's not many people who can sort of stand there and be like, I've had a consistent career. And yes, it might not be what I initially planned, but I've had a brilliant time in the process. I just have to take moments sometimes to be like, it doesn't matter where your path leads. If you're enjoying the ride, go with it.
Absolutely.
And I found this whole world that I didn't know existed, and I love it. I want to do more. But I was very lucky that during lockdown, the Teletubbies released an album. I don't know. It's not very well known. I'm trying to still push it out there.
Okay.
They didn't get the record deal that they wanted, where it would have been played on the radio. But we were trying to fight for Christmas number one. I think it was 2021 in the end when it all got released. But I was allowed to be Dipsy. I was kind of actually one of the Teletubbies for all the music videos.
Wow.
So that was really fun.
Yes.
So yeah, I've got one. I've got a Teletubby under my belt as well.
Amazing.
What I don't know is that when do I tell Lily? Because she loves the Teletubbies. Don't know why. Don't know where she gets that from. But when do I say, that Hoover, that's your mum? I don't know when I approach that topic.
Maybe not yet. I think that would be massively confusing.
Yeah, we'll just wait. 18th birthday.
Go shopping around Currys and go, is this mummy?
Yeah. Yeah, like Henry the Hoover, like, your brother? No. So silly.
Oh, but it's an amazing industry. I think, yeah, it's just not recognized enough as being, it is part of the arts, and it is a skill, and it is hard work. But what you were saying about, you know, enjoying your path, it really is, that is all that matters. And some people go into musical theater and they probably think, oh, I wish I'd done more character work. Like, you can't have it all. I mean, some people will say yes you can. I mean, yeah, you there is to you could extent. If you wanted to go for a West End audition, you could if you wanted to, but you love where you are.
Yeah, I do
you love
and
it.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's wanting to give me a West End audition, that's fine. I do love where I am. But it's that thing as well, sort of, I do think about it at times, especially being a mum. I'm like, could I be in the West End? Because this is the thing as well. Mm. People might look at me and say like, okay, well, you've been very lucky that you've known the panto director in advance before Lily was allowed to be involved. It is, and it must be worrying for mums that are like, okay, I've got to go and have an audition now. I'm going to meet a new company. I have a child. How do I deal with this? That's something I've not had to properly deal with yet. But what I sort of think, like, I would like, you know, if the opportunity arose, I would love to go and give the West End a try. But then you go, oh, but what do I do about Lily? It shouldn't be either or. There must be a way of getting support. And I do hope that job sharing becomes more of a thing. I know it's something that people are addressing and casting directors are talking about. But I feel like, how would I feel about 8 shows a week? How would I feel being away from Lily that much constantly for like a year contract? It's tough. It's a really, it would be a really tough thing to have to decide.
Yeah.
But then if you could do a job share where you're doing potentially 3 days a week, that would be much more manageable, and having that sort of structure with someone. I do hope it's something that can become reality. And
yes,
it's hard because I know you have to pay 2 wages. But then I know I'd be willing to take, I wouldn't be expecting to receive a full weekly wage from my 3 days.
Yes,
work.
Yeah.
Because I think that's something that is being addressed at the moment, that people are like, well, I need the full week wage. But I can't do the full week work. So I think we're going to have to compromise somewhere.
Yes.
But it's then being able to afford potentially the childcare for the days that you're in. It's a really tough thing, but I'm so pleased that the industry are now talking
yes,
about it.
Yes, because if you're a single mum, then that is the only option, isn't it? You have to put them in nursery or, you know, if you're
unless
lucky to have other family members.
But, you know, and then do you feel bad relying on them completely? It's really tough.
It is tough.
So that is something that
I'd
quite like to talk about this. Something that I found when I was pregnant, actually, it was a friend of mine, MJ, she told me about it, was Spotlight. They were doing an amazing virtual coffee morning for mums and pregnant mums, like mums-to-be. It was fantastic. And they were bringing guests on, like casting directors and agents. Like, they wanted to know, as from mums, what do we want from the industry? And
you
know, the fact that people were actually addressing it and willing to talk about it was so inspiring and so exciting. You're like, is this going to happen? But sadly, they ran out of funding, and there's now the coffee morning doesn't happen anymore, which is such a shame. But there's still a WhatsApp group with all the mums still talking about things, which is brilliant.
Need to bring it back.
Yeah, we need to
bring
get
it
the funding
back.
Come on, Spotlight.
Just quickly, while I have your attention, if you can please make sure you subscribe, as it really, really does help to boost the show. Thank you all so much. All right, let's get back to it.
It was wonderful. And actually, through that platform, I heard about this wonderful charity that I know I've mentioned to you that I would love to talk about,
yes,
which have supported me a lot. They're called ACT. So it's the Actors Children's Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And it supports the children of acting parents, basically. So you don't have to be, if you're in a partnership, you don't both have to be within the industry, just as long as one of you is.
Okay.
But with this one particularly, I think there is a dance-related one, but this one is very specifically acting-based. They will look at your spotlight to see if you're eligible. So the things like my tribute work doesn't count as an acting job, but panto and acting jobs do.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if they'd count Teletubbies. I haven't checked that actually. If that
they
counts,
should.
If they count that as acting or not, I don't know. But yeah, so what they do is they look at your spotlight. You have to be under a certain threshold with your income and savings. And then they just give you, they give you financial support, which is wonderful, but they also give you advice. And they're just there at the end of the phone. Robert, who is now, I think he's always been in charge, but now he's sort of the person that you sort of interact with the most. And Lydia, who's just left, she was wonderful. They just do whatever they can to make your life easier. And it was something that I was just flabbergasted by. I just could not believe it, that I found out about it when I was pregnant. And they said, okay, well, let us know when your baby's born, because we will support you for the first 6 months.
Wow.
They were like, so obviously being self-employed, statutory maternity pay isn't brilliant. It's great that you have something, but it wasn't great. So just having that little booster from them just meant I didn't need to worry about nappies. I could get nappies and it wasn't a problem. And just that kind of financial support, just lifting it off when you're not working at all, you're just thinking like, oh, can I afford this? This is okay. I want to give everything to my child that I can. And that they just were there to give me that little bit of money, which was just wonderful.
Wow.
But they help you with things like buying uniforms for school. They have allowances for like term time. So they don't do private school fees, but they would potentially help you with the uniform and sort of the extras for that kind of thing. But yeah, normal school life, extra curriculum activities, and then things like that, you know, they're supporting me with Lily's swimming lessons. So it doesn't have to be performance based. It's just anything that you want to be able to get your child to do, they'll help you. And it's been wonderful. But the biggest thing that they just saved me with was childcare for panto. Basically, I did my 6 weeks run in Peterborough, where I was very lucky that the choreographer was desperate to help me. She had, you know, all the time in the world, wants to show up, and she was like, I will have her every show. So that was wonderful. But then we always take our show up to Scotland. Well, it's actually the Outer Hebrides. It's miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And they paid for my parents to fly to be there. And it was such a relief for me, just knowing that Lily was in hands that I trusted.
Yeah.
And they had a lovely week in the Outer Hebrides looking after their grandchild.
Wow.
They had a great time. And it was just all thanks to this charity. And I know they do some fundraisers throughout the year, like the West End musicals get involved and they sell props and costumes and to fundraise for the charity.
Incredible.
But they just do fantastic work. So if you are a mum or a dad out there that needs any sort of financial support, it is worth checking them out. So it's ACT, Actors Children's Trust, and they're just, I can't sing their praises enough.
Wow.
They're wonderful.
It sounds incredible. I bet there's so many people who are like, I need to get on this right now.
I know obviously you need to fit the criteria, and they're quite thorough with their searches, but
I can imagine
they will do whatever they can to help you. And they're just lovely people as well.
So there's nothing worse than struggling as a parent when you're just worrying about money and all this, you know, to just have that pressure taken off a little bit.
Absolutely.
It helps. It really does help. Yeah. So tell me about your experience, because you were at Performing Arts with Erdang.
Yes.
Right? So what was your experience?
I loved it. I would do it again in a heartbeat. I loved my year group. I did the 3-year diploma course. They didn't have a degree at that point. But I mean, I think like every theatre school, every drama school comes with things that maybe weren't dealt with in the best way. I have to say Erdang were particularly good at supporting like us with our body image and things. Like, it was never, you know, you hear about some schools where you get weighed when you arrive, and it was never like that.
Good.
I mean, so that was fantastic. And I loved the training I got there. I yeah, I would honestly do it again in a heartbeat. I loved it. But sadly, the end of my journey wasn't particularly great there. And I feel like this is actually something that's come up in quite a lot of your podcasts where mm-hmm. actually you didn't feel quite supported in the right way. There was yeah. just one teacher, and it's such a shame that one, that actually out of all the wonderful teachers that were there, there was one teacher that leaves that lasting impact, you know. So it was my, well, actually, sorry, rewinding a little bit. In my second year, I had to go on a month's vocal rest. I think it was kind of self-inflicted, really. I was terrible at drinking water. I was just massively dehydrated, I think. And I, you know, you're dancing, you're singing, and you're just wearing away your vocal cords.
Gosh, yeah.
Not hydrating them enough. And so I had to go on a month's voice rest, which kind of, you know, you're sitting watching people rehearse. It was heartbreaking. It was awful. Mm. But it gave me fire in my belly when my voice was back to really push for the third year. I was like, I'm going to get an agent. I'm going to be seen in all the showcases. And yeah, it gave me that fire in my belly to sort of really make the most out of my third year. I want to leave feeling like I've accomplished everything I want to. And the end of, so our second year final show, I've got my first part in the musical, and it was like, oh, this is a wonderful, nice. It wasn't the leading role, but it was a part, and I was yeah. so excited. And this director sort of made it very clear that I was the only person with an understudy. Like he didn't really, I mean, kind of understandable. I had not sung for a month. I might not make it for a run, you know, that's fair mm-hmm. enough. But he made us do like a sing-off in front of the year group.
A sing-off?
Yeah, like basically he wanted me to prove to him that I deserved the part. So having already auditioned like everyone did, I then had that extra sort of, it was horrible. But then in the third year, what was unusual, I don't think this is the case now, was that not everyone in our year group was in your final showcase. You had to audition to be showcased. Which...
That's really strange, because if you've been going to the school, you'd think you would be guaranteed that.
Yeah, it was very strange. We were in our sort of graduate show, but we had, because it's like, you know, Erdane still sort of thought as a very much a dance school, but, you know, musical theatre is very strong there. So we had a showcase for the musical theatre course and then like a dance showcase. But then weirdly, the musical theatre course could be in the dance showcase, but the dance people couldn't be in the musical theatre showcase.
Right.
It was a bit backwards. But I had auditioned and I got into the showcase, and this was like, yes, this is brilliant. And then he really struggled. He made it very obvious that he was struggling to find a solo for me for my 30 seconds of audition type, you know, showcasing myself. But we found one in the end, and I did the showcase and it was fine. And then it got to our final show, which by that point in the year, agents aren't really, have already seen their showcases that they want to see. When it comes to that final show, you might get a few come along, but it's more an end of year show. Let's just have a good time. But we'd always been told that that final show, especially if you hadn't been in the showcase, you would get a solo just to, you know, if there are some agents that come, you will be showcased. And they listed, we sat in a room, I'll never forget it. We sat in one of the rehearsal rooms and they read out everyone's solos and it kept going. I was like, maybe it's alphabetical. Like, maybe I'll be last on the list. Like, nope. Then there was just nothing for me. And I was like, oh no, that's a shame. So I went to go and speak to this teacher and he told me basically that why would he put me on the stage when I've got vocal health issues. At this point, I didn't have any vocal health issues anymore. And I was like, okay. It was heart-wrenching, but he also was like, you're just forgettable. And sort of you come into a room and you apologize for being there. And like, why would I put you on the stage when there's people who will get work that I could showcase? And I kicked myself because I cried. Obviously, I cried in front of him. And he just told me to get out of his sight, which was just...
Charming.
Yeah. And I then, I mean, we had guests, wonderful guest directors for that final show. Mm-hmm. And the woman who was, her name's Hannah Chiswick, she was our guest director. And she's just a wonderful, wonderful woman. And she's like, I saw you in the showcase. I like your voice. You know, like this, I didn't realize you had vocal issues. And I was like, I don't think I do anymore. Like I've been given the all clear. And she's like, well, no, we'll give you a little something. So I was allowed to sing a verse of something on my own, which was so sweet of her. But I left my third year going, okay, I'm probably not going to be in this industry. Like, how am I going to get noticed if I walk in and I'm forgotten about straight away? Like, you know, the competition is so fierce.
Yeah.
And so I honestly left thinking, like, I've done my 3 years. I felt hugely indebted to my parents because they had funded my training. And I was just like, no, that like, I don't want to go out and give up. I'm going to try. I just want to try. And I, you know, then I met that, you know, I applied for my Thomas the Tank Engine audition.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The rest is history. But it's just, it's amazing how that one person can, in a way, he fueled me to be like, no, screw you. I'm going to try anyway. But it just didn't need to be like that.
No.
There are just ways about talking to people. And yeah. I know this resonates with
you. Yes, it does.
And it's just, it's such a shame because I've respected him so much as a teacher. And our whole year group were desperate for his approval because he was that kind of teacher which you had to fight for his real approval.
Hmm.
And
I wonder what that says about him, though. They made people feel like that, every single one.
Yeah, and I think if you spoke to anyone in our year group without name, like mentioning his name, they would know who I was talking about.
Sure.
And I hope he isn't like that anymore. But he's such a shame because he's such a good teacher, which even makes me more annoyed because I was like, you could get everything you wanted out of a student without being nasty.
No, and it's horrible. I mean, say that to someone else and they would have crumbled and there would be no career and they would have just given up, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it gave you the fuel, but to someone else, it could have shattered them to pieces. And yet, you know, even though you've done this amazing career, it's still something that just niggles at you sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that final year was just laced with a little bit of sadness, I guess, because
yeah,
you were just getting knocked. I mean, it's amazing that you can just bounce back and go, no. I mean, I think being told no as a performer, it does fuel you.
Sometimes.
And I feel like sometimes you do need that. But there is, yeah, definitely agree with you. There is a way to speak to your students.
Yeah.
There are so many other ways he could have said that. Or sometimes I feel when you come into the studio that you're not having a big enough impact. Let's work on that.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah.
I mean, because I can imagine that. I think I am quite a like, oh, sorry, like that kind of person. And actually one of my first panto auditions, I got the job. And when I started the work, he was like, oh, yes, you curtsied in your audition. And I was like, what? Apparently I walked in and I kind of curtsied as I gave my CV over.
Aww.
And I think that's kind of like a nervous, like, oh, like, thank you for having me kind of bob. I was like, I'm sure it wasn't a curtsy. But he was like, but I remembered you. And I was like, well, that's true.
There you go. The nervous bob word.
No, nervous curtsy got me a job. So, yeah,
it's like he mistook kindness for weakness somehow.
Well, maybe.
Because you're clearly a very kind person. And I think that you do, I used to be like that. I'd just be like, you know, but you know, and then you learn, oh, that's not getting me anywhere. And then you get a bit of feistiness, not too much, just like a little sprinkle of feistiness.
Yeah.
Definitely have a lot of that now. And it just helps you get to where you need to be. If there's just a little area that he's working on, you'll do it. If you don't get a job, okay, you'll work on maybe the reasons why you didn't get that. And you'll make damn sure you get it the next time.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
But just the right way to teach us, just the right way to speak to your students. Yeah. Like, it's so important.
It's just such a shame because we all respected him so much anyway.
Yeah.
He didn't need to be like that. We would have done anything he wanted at a drop of a hat anyway. But yeah, I hope he's happy. I hope it wasn't fueled from something in him, you know, like.
Yes, because it does come from somewhere, you know, from my training so far, you know, it does sort of what's going on with him. If he needs to do that, but maybe it was just, maybe his career was difficult and he didn't want you guys to go through the same thing. You know, it can just go so far back, but you know, you don't talk about that with your students and there's a language barrier already there with their past and your future. So what's your favorite part of being a mummy in the profession?
Oh, I mean, I have that moment when I brought Lily onto stage was, it was very special. I think it is the luxury I've had of actually being able to have her there has been, it's been wonderful. And I've always, before I was a mum, before I realized just how hard it is, I just always hoped that I could continue my career to have Vicky as Lily's mum. I wasn't, not that being just, it's nothing about being just a mum, but I wanted to still have my passion and my fire in me and show Lily that I could still be driven and still have a dream. And because I think being a stay-at-home mum is must be the most incredibly hard job in the world. But if you can have that balance and still show Lily that I can give her all my love and everything I can possibly give her when I'm at home, that I can, I think being away and doing what I love will give me that. You know what I mean? Yeah. It means I can still be me and be the best, which means I'll be the best mummy I can be. And I think because I'm still doing something that I love, it's completing me. Now having Lily there, being my little world, I feel complete now because I'm still able to do what I love. And it must be really hard for people who felt like they've had to make that choice and now can't do that and are potentially doing a 9-to-5, which is, I know how you felt when you started your car phone warehouse job, where it's like, it's not creative. And if you, think if you're a creative person and you lose that, even if you've had to change your field slightly, if you can keep that passion and that thing that makes you happy alongside your mother role,
yes,
that's what's going to make you the best person you can be and the best person for your daughter. And I just want her to know that you can still follow your dreams, whatever you decide to do with your life, that mummy followed her dreams, you can too.
That's such an important message as well. Isn't it? I hope so. Don't you think?
It's always what I wanted to do. And I think when I became a mum, I was like, okay, it's harder than just being like, I'm still going to do both. It's like, you can't, it's not that easy. And I am in a very privileged position with, like, especially with my ABBA show as well. Like, Lily's been able to come with me. And when I went back when she was 4 months old, it was a case of, right, I have to breastfeed her before I go on for act one. I'd come off in the interval and she'd be crying for milk. So I'd feed her in the interval. And then it was a lot.
Wow.
But it was the choice I made. And I was supported by the show I was working on. And that was magic. That was incredible to be able to do that with her. Hard, but wonderful.
Yes, I was going to say, what is the most challenging part of being a mummy?
The mum guilt is the biggest battle that I think most mums face with any job, any sort of split role that you're doing, mum and work. But yeah, it's just a feeling. You hear people throw it around, they're the mum guilt. But experiencing it, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And that is definitely the biggest challenge. Like being away from her at sort of those, antisocial hours, as it were, sort of being away in the evenings, is tough. And yeah, just feeling guilty, and especially because I'm off doing a job that to a lot of people, it's fun to me, but a lot of people sort of sometimes don't deem it as work. They're like, oh, you've gone off to do this show. Like this week I'm off to Nice, I'm going to do my ABBA show in France. Oh, you're swanning off on like a holiday. But it is work. But it's that sort of thing of like juggling the guilt of that. It's like, because I'm having so much fun away from you, does that make me a terrible mum? It's that is something I battle with as well. It's like, you can go and have a good time without your child and it not mean you love them any less.
Yeah.
So the mum guilt is the biggest juggle for me with my emotions, because I am a very emotional person. And though I think I'm quite strong, it's really been a wake-up call having someone else to consider and not just being like, yes, I'll take this job when it comes in, and without any sort of thinking of the consequence of that. It's like, oh, it only affected me and my husband, who was also in the industry, so understood. It was quite an easy decision in the past, but now it's like, okay, childcare, how does that work? How do we make this happen? And it's just that new world that I'm having to navigate. And it's hard, but it's wonderful.
It's hard to juggle it. I mean, I wasn't in the arts when I had my now eldest, Jack. He's 6, but I had a couple of raves that I went to. It's becoming widely known that I like raving. But I would go out and I would be dancing and having a really good time. And then I would suddenly just have him in my mind and go, oh, I feel really bad. Yeah. Why have I come out? And then I'm just like, I need to go back. And then I'm like messaging whoever he's with, like, is he okay? And they're like, he's fine, Candy. He's asleep. Just enjoy your night. And then you're just there going, oh, even though he's asleep, I'm still sudden, like somehow feeling guilty. Why? Yeah. But you do, you're so attached to them. But like you said, the balance is good. It's important. And it's actually really good to miss your child and for them to miss you. So when you reunite, you know, that magic moment, you know, as long as there's, like I said, the attachment and the love when you are together, that's unbreakable.
And it does, it does make me a better mom when I am there. As you say, I'm far more present because I'm like, oh, I really want to play with you now. I am happy to listen to Old MacDonald Had a Farm on that push button book a million times because I had a little break from it. She just holds that button down. All of that. But, you know, those sort of things that are tough, you get that little break for you to be you, and then you can come back and give her all the attention she deserves. And I think that's very, very important.
It is, because being a mother can be a bit consuming when you're constantly there. I was full-time mum when I had Jack, and you know, like you were saying, it just triggered something for me. Yeah. There was a toy that he just kept pressing the button. I was there going, oh my God, I'm going to lose it. But then you'd be like, you'd go for a nap and they'd be back, you'd be like, oh, I kind of missed that noise.
Yeah,
and then
it's press it again. Oh dear. Yeah, it's fun.
It's fun. It's difficult. It's challenging. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's all the emotions.
It
for
is.
Sure.
In one day sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. In an hour sometimes. But yeah, I wouldn't change it for anything. She's wonderful.
So I've got a question for you. What would be your advice to performers who want to have children but do not want to give up their careers?
Oh, this is really tough because I am very lucky that I have a support network, but my parents live nearly 2 hours away, so they're not on the doorstep. Mm. But I think if you can surround yourself with support, whether that is physically on the doorstep, but having that moral support from people is so important. I think if you feel secure in that, you can do anything. I do think the industry is finally addressing the fact that mums particularly want to do that.
Yes.
It's always going to be slightly easier for a dad. There's no way about it. There is some sort of, whether you're breastfeeding or not, there is that connection with a mum, which is just slightly different.
Yes.
And I think the fact that it's being spoken about, the ball is rolling now. Casting directors are more aware of it. Agents are aware of it and how they can support you on their books. I think going forwards, it is going to get easier. You shouldn't have to choose. So advice, I think it's just, if you want it enough, you can do it. It is hard, but you need to know that is definitely what you want, because it is absolutely fine to feel like, no, you know what, I want to be there at every bedtime. I don't want to be swanning off and doing a show at 8 o'clock at night and then getting back in the wee hours of the morning to then have to wake up 3 hours later with your child. Like, it's okay to not want to do that. And I think as long as you know it's what's going to make you the best person you can be, you can absolutely do it. So if you want to, stick at it. And find those support networks, like ACT, hopefully, well, Spotlight anyway, but hopefully that Spotlight Mums network.
Yes, definitely.
Find those people and surround yourself with other performer mums and dads, because when you feel like you're not alone, you can do it. So yeah, I think find those platforms to help you and you can do anything.
Perfect. Vicky, what an honor. It's been an amazing show. Aww. And it's been nice to talk about being mummies. Yay. It's just nice. I mean, your career has been just magical. And I'm so fascinated by it now. I'm going to be watching TV programs with a whole new perspective.
There's been a lot of us out there. Yes. A lot of sneaky skin costumes in the world.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure a lot of people will be thinking about getting into it as well. It's great. Yeah, thank you so much for your time.
It's been
amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I ended up watching The Teletubbies and In the Night Garden with my kids, of course. And I had so much respect for every member of the cast. It was such a wonderful chat. Vicky is beautiful inside and out. And as you can probably tell, a terrific mother. You can be a good mum and a working mum. You are allowed to do both. And a personal message for my mum. I wouldn't be me without you.